Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again, I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with the program that helps you improve your American English skills. We have two stories for you today that use simple words and we'll present slowly enough for you to understand easily. If you save the program from our website as a podcast, you can listen again and again and practice speaking English the American way every day. We start first today with information you need to know about the changes that lie ahead for relations between Cuba and the United States. Then we'll travel back in time to learn how a killer disease affected people then and how it has changed over time. Let's get started with part one. Secretary of State John Kerry says the United States has launched what he calls a policy of transformation with Cuba. He says the government is urging Cuban leaders to make changes that will help the Cuban people. Christopher Jones Cruz reports.
Secretary Kerry spoke to reporters on Sunday, the day after President Barack Obama met with Cuban leader Raul Castro. The two leaders shook hands and spoke in Panama, where they attended the Summit of the Americas. It was the first time U.S. and Cuban leaders have met in more than 50 years. Secretary Kerry told ABC News on Sunday that U.S. economic sanctions on Cuba have not forced the leaders of the island nation to change. The sanctions were put in place soon after Fidel Castro seized power in 1959.
The belief is very powerful that by beginning to engage, by beginning to have greater travel, greater ability to move, greater ability to visit, ideas and opportunities will grow, that the Cuban people themselves will have a greater opportunity for expression and for exchange of views. And that is what will promote a transformation over a period of time. But we have to begin somewhere, and the president has courageously decided to change a policy that hasn't worked.
Mr. Kerry told NBC News that he has spoken with Mr. Obama about whether Cuba should be removed from a U.S. list of countries that support terrorism. Cuba has demanded the removal. Mr. Kerry says he expects the president will make a decision about that in the next few days. A leading member of the U.S. Senate is critical of the administration's new policy toward Cuba. New Jersey Senator Robert Menendez is also a member of President Obama's Democratic Party. Mr. Menendez told Fox News on Sunday that the president is giving Cuba everything it wants and has received nothing to help the Cuban people. The senator's parents came to the United States from Cuba in 1953. The father of Republican Senator Ted Cruz was born in Cuba. Senator Cruz has also criticized the administration's policy. In a statement, he said the president is leaving the Cuban people imprisoned in the past. Mark Jones is a Latin America expert at Rice University in Texas. He says the change in U.S. policy towards Cuba will help U.S. relations with Latin American countries. He says the current policy has weakened United States influence in the area.
It's only held us back and made us look bad. Even among our allies in Latin America, there's quite a bit of skepticism, if not embarrassment, regarding U.S.-Cuba policy. It's also a smart thing to do economically in that Cuba will be a good market for U.S. export, particularly agricultural goods, eventually. And getting started on the normalization process is a move in the right direction.
Ted Henken is a Cuba expert at Baruch College in New York. He notes that Raul Castro has said the Cuban government's policies will not change. But he says the Cuban leader admitted that no one really knows what will happen in years to come.
He did also say, interestingly and surprisingly, I thought, during the conversation he had with Barack Obama, that the things that we may disagree on today, the world moves very fast and we may end up agreeing on tomorrow. I don't think that Raul Castro is going to become a Democrat in his last 3 years in office. He said he's going to step down in 2018. But I do think that laying the groundwork now and looking towards the future is the right move, because it's not really about Obama and it's not really about Raul Castro. It's about the Cuban people, and I think this policy has a much better chance of helping them than our past policy.
Mr. Henken says the U.S. Congress could cancel the economic sanctions against Cuba before Mr. Obama leaves office in early 2017. But he says that will only happen if there are enough positive developments following the announcement that the two countries will reestablish diplomatic relations. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America. We are coming to you from Washington. Researchers have found tuberculosis bacteria in 200-year-old human remains. The researchers say the discovery is surprising. The remains came from a Hungarian church where wealthy Europeans were buried. Today, tuberculosis affects mostly poor people. As we hear from Jonathan Evans, the finding shows how the deadly lung disease has changed over time.
Tuberculosis, or TB, mostly affects poor people or those already infected with the AIDS virus. Many TB patients live in the developing world. TB rarely affects wealthy people in developed countries. But the situation was different in Europe 250 years ago. The researchers found that in the 18th century, wealthy Europeans also suffered from TB. Sometimes the Europeans even had more than one kind of the disease. A report in the journal Nature Communications describes the findings. It says the researchers examined the remains of 26 people. Their bodies were kept at the Dominican Church in Vác, Hungary. The remains were mummified, that is, they had not broken down. The researchers say 8 of the 26 bodies had signs of tuberculosis bacteria. In fact, researchers were able to identify 14 different TB genomes among the remains. 5 of the mummies were infected with more than one kind of TB. One of the researchers was Mark Palin. He is with the University of Warwick in Britain. He says the new evidence shows people in the 18th century often suffered from several different strains of TB. For example, he says, researchers discovered a mother and daughter who were both infected with many TB strains. He says they may have passed the disease to each other. The discovery makes researchers believe that many people across Europe suffered from TB. The disease spreads easily through a population. Mr. Palin says the discovery may make doctors think differently about tuberculosis. Researchers today usually expect patients to have only one kind of TB.
I don't think I can claim single-handedly to have changed the field in any way, but it's just changing the way people think, and it's just making people think more carefully about the assumptions that underlie what we do at the moment.
Today, researchers say a number of TB infections have been discovered in South Africa, where many people have the virus that causes AIDS. Being infected with more than one strain of TB makes treating the disease difficult. Mr. Palin's team studied changes in both old and new TB bacteria samples. He says their research suggests a common ancestor for the current bacterium existed nearly 6,000 years ago, as far back as ancient Rome. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to As It Is from The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Cambodia has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in Southeast Asia. The number of women dying during pregnancy or childbirth has dropped in recent years, but it is still far short of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals. The Cambodian government accepted those goals as part of its effort to help pregnant women. Years ago, UN member nations and international agencies agreed on a plan of action in 8 areas, including maternal health. They set the end of 2015 as a target date for reaching the goals. More than 1,000 Cambodian women die each year during pregnancy or childbirth. That is down almost 50% compared to the number 15 years ago. However, it still is short of the Millennium Development Goals. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, says many Cambodian mothers die during childbirth because they lack medical care, mainly in emergencies. There is a lack of trained medical workers across the country. In a recent report, UNICEF said that even when mothers can access health care, overall quality of care is deficient. It said that makes for more challenges women face in overcoming possible health problems, both during and after childbirth. Kai Sovanaroth is head of the Cambodian National Assembly's Committee on Health and Women's Affairs. She said the government needs to do more to help women during pregnancy and childbirth. The mortality rate for Cambodian women is higher than Thailand's rate of 48 or Vietnam's rate of 59. Only Laos received a lower rating with 470 deaths per 100,000 live births. Cambodia has increased the number of skilled medical workers assisting in childbirth. Tungroth Tavy noted that the country also has doubled the number of health centers over the past 10 years. Tungroth Tavy said Cambodian officials have plans to expand health care in the future, to bring services closer to the people, especially women and children. She said that the country needs skilled health care workers, including midwives. We still need more skilled midwives to do this work in these places where we are still lacking, she said. We have been working a lot to increase resources, especially skilled birth attendants. Another area of improvement is a reduction in patients with anemia and iron deficiency. Tungroth Tavy said that her country has reduced the level of severe anemia to lower than 1%. The government says that during pregnancy, poor women do not have to pay for health care services. But Kai Sovanaroth said she has received reports that pregnant women still have to pay for those services. We have found that women died from childbirth due to the neglect of their doctors, she said. But we do not see the government punish those who have done wrong. I'm Ann Ball. ¶¶
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. This week in our series, Steve Ember and Shirley Griffith talk about Calvin Coolidge and how he became President of the United States.
The early 1920s were a troubled time for the United States. Congress and the public began to discover crimes by several officials in the administration of President Warren Harding. Harding himself became seriously sick during a trip to Alaska and western states. He died in a hotel room in California in August 1923. Harding's vice president, Calvin Coolidge, became the new president. Both men were Republicans. Their policies on issues were much the same. Coolidge, however, was a very different man. He was completely honest. He was the kind of president the country needed to rebuild public trust in the government.
Calvin Coolidge was quiet and plain-looking. He was the son of a farmer and political leader from the small northeastern state of Vermont. Young Calvin worked at different jobs to pay for his college education. He became a lawyer. He moved to another northeastern state, Massachusetts, where he became active in Republican Party politics. First, he was elected mayor of the town. Then he was elected to the state legislature. Finally, he was elected governor of Massachusetts. It was as governor that Coolidge first became known throughout the United States.
In 1919, a group of policemen in the city of Boston tried to start a labor union. This violated the rules of the police department. So the commissioner of police suspended 19 of the union's leaders. The next day, almost 75% of Boston's policemen went on strike. Criminals walked freely through the city for 2 nights. They robbed stores and threatened public safety. Frightened Americans all across the country waited to see what Governor Coolidge would do.
He took strong action. He called on state troops to end the strike. He said, "There is no right to strike against the public safety by anybody, anywhere, anytime." Most Americans approved of what Coolidge did. The people of Massachusetts supported him, too. They re-elected him governor by a large number of votes. Then, in 1920, Republicans nominated Warren Harding for president. They nominated Calvin Coolidge for vice president. When President Harding died in California, Coolidge, his wife, and 2 sons moved to the White House.
America's 30th president was, in some ways, an unusual kind of person to lead the country. He said little. He showed few feelings. Coolidge's policies as president were not active. He tried to start as few new programs as possible. He was a conservative Republican who believed deeply that government should be small. Coolidge expressed his belief this way: "If the federal government should go out of existence, most people would not note the difference." And once, he said, 4/5 of our troubles in this life would disappear if we would only sit down and keep still.
Coolidge believed that private business, not the federal government, should lead the country to greater wealth and happiness. He continued President Harding's policy of supporting American business both inside the United States and in other countries. The government, under President Coolidge, continued high taxes on imports in an effort to help American companies.
Many Americans shared Coolidge's ideas about small government and big business. In the early 1920s, many of them were living better than ever before. At that time, companies were growing larger. The prices of their stocks rose higher and higher. There were lots of jobs, and the wages of many workers increased. Americans agreed with their president that there was little need for government spending and government programs when private industry seemed so strong.
The American economy grew in the 1920s for several reasons. The World War had destroyed many factories and businesses in Europe. The United States did not suffer the same destruction. It was still a young country. It had great natural resources, trained workers, and a huge market within its own borders. When peace came, Americans found their economy stronger than any other in the world.
Changes in the American market also helped economic growth. Installment buying became popular. In this system, people could buy a product and pay for it over a period of several weeks or months. The total cost was higher because they had to pay interest. But the system made it possible for more people to buy more goods. It also made the idea of borrowing money more acceptable to many Americans.
The growing importance of the New York stock markets also helped economic growth in the 1920s. Millions of Americans bought shares of stock in companies that seemed to grow bigger every month. Such investment almost became a national game. People would buy shares of stock, then sell them when the stock rose in value. There were many stories of poor people who became rich overnight by buying the right stocks. The American Congress also helped the economy by lowering income taxes. People had more money to spend on new goods. Another important reason for economic growth was a change in the way American companies were operated.
During the 1920s, the idea of manufacturing goods in the most scientific way became very popular. The father of this idea of scientific management was an engineer, Frederick Taylor. Mr. Taylor developed a system to study manufacturing. He studied each machine involved in the process. He studied how much work each person did. He studied how goods moved from one part of a factory to another. Then he offered ideas to business owners about ways to produce goods faster and for less cost.
Taylor's ideas of scientific management appealed to business owners. Automobile manufacturer Henry Ford proved that the ideas could work in his new car factory in the state of Michigan. Ford used the assembly line system of production. In this system, each worker did one thing to a product as it moved through the factory. This helped cut prices and increase wages.
Ford and other businessmen learned a great deal about how to control costs, set prices, and decide how much to produce. All these changes in production and marketing helped Ford and other American companies grow larger and stronger. Henry Ford's Model T car became popular throughout the country. So did other new products: radios, refrigerators for cooling food, vacuums to clean carpets, ready-made cigarettes, beauty products. Americans in the 1920s began to buy all kinds of new products they had never used before.
Calvin Coolidge was in the White House. However, business led the nation. Times were good. Americans trusted business and its leaders. It became an honor to call someone a businessman. Colleges organized business classes. Middle-class citizens in almost every city and town gathered to discuss business ideas. President Coolidge spoke for millions of Americans when he said, "The chief business of the American people is business."
Coolidge represented traditional values and a simple way of life. He knew exactly how every dollar he earned was saved or spent, and he spent no more money than was necessary. The strange thing was that Coolidge was extremely popular with a public that was spending large amounts of money. Some economic experts warned that the country's quick economic growth would end in economic depression. Most Americans, however, believed that the good times had come to stay. They enjoyed the good things in life that work and success in business could bring. On our next program, we will see how the economic growth of the 1920s brought exciting changes to the day-to-day life of millions of Americans.
Our program was written by Nancy Steinbach. The narrators were Steve Ember and Shirley Griffith. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and historical images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.